Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba.
Hi, Mark DeLuzio, episode 67. This episode is going to be called Humble Errors, the errors we made when creating the Danaher Business System. Now, you know, I've been to so many conferences, and at one particular conference, I said to the conference founder, hey, you know, it's great that you have all these people coming up and talking about all their lean successes. But wouldn't people learn more if they knew the problems that were had when, you know, reaching these great pinnacles of success? Because I hear some people talk, whether it's CEOs of major companies that came out of Danaher, or if you hear people talk, you know, any type of executive that, you know, even worked for Danaher for the shortest time, they all seemed as if they're the ones that invented it. You know, George Conesacre, one of my mentors who hired me back in 1987 at Jake Break, said to me, success has many fathers and failure is an orphan. Okay. So to hear some people talk, you think they probably invented Lean, never mind Teashiono, right? But I thought, you know, instead of standing up there and talking about all the great things that we did, it's better to talk perhaps from a learning perspective as to the things that we didn't do all that well. And I look back at my time at Danaher, and as we created the Danaher Business System, there were definitely things I would have done differently, okay? And there were definitely things that I wouldn't have done at all. Now that I, you know, have a little bit more experience and a little bit more wisdom, at the time, they all seemed like the great things to do. But this presentation, I'm going to talk about the 10 things that we did. We did more than 10 things wrong, but some of the things that we did wrong that we should have thought, you know, more clearly about, although we did self-correct on most of these, okay? And but nevertheless, I want to talk about them because I see a lot of the same mistakes happening today. And I also see, you know, in my book, Flatlined, I talk about the things that I constantly see people call me about. And we're making the same mistakes over and over and over again. So I'm going to show the presentation and actually walk you through these 10 things that we maybe tripped up on a little bit. And hopefully your learning will be more advanced than if I sat here and talked about all the great things that we did. And by the way, we did do a lot of great things, okay? But I'm more interested in getting you to learn and get your speed to value faster than even what we did at Danaher, okay? So hopefully this is helpful for you. So I'm calling this Humble Errors, the 10 lessons learned in the creation of the Danaher Business System. If you're watching on YouTube or Rumble, I'm showing the presentation. I'll try to walk you through the things that I am showing so that nobody's left in the dust if you're listening, you know, on Apple Podcasts or one of the other mediums. This slide is showing an iceberg. It's showing a beautiful, shiny iceberg above the water, but down below, you can see the ugliness of the iceberg. And you know, I always had said about the icebergs, that's all the hard work, all the mistakes, all the trial and errors, all the things that, you know, went wrong to give us this beautiful looking iceberg. And remember, it's the bottom of the iceberg that sunk the Titanic, okay? So keep that in mind, okay? Everybody likes to look at the success, and everybody likes to talk about their success, but few like to talk about the problems that they had along the way. Well, that's what I'm going to do. Humble Errors, the 10 lessons learned in the creation of the Danaher Business System. Okay. So I want to share this, and hopefully this is going to help you with your lean transformation. And hopefully you'll be able to come back to me and send me an email later and say, hey, look, you were right, Mark. We're having the same issue. Thanks for helping out, because Again, I see these errors happening time and time and time again. Lean is not common sense. It's very counterintuitive to how we were trained to run business in a traditional sense. Okay. So, error one. Early on, we focused on generating profits. Okay. And only looking at the shareholders as our number one stakeholder. How are we going to drive profits? How are we going to drive our stock price and things like that? Now, all those things are what I call lagging indicators. Those are the results of doing the things right. Okay. So we had to kind of shift a little bit and say, hey, look, we have to take care of our stakeholder groups. And this is where I developed what I call the Lean Trilogy, where you look at your employees, your customers, and your shareholders, and you look at them not as a zero-sum game, but each one of these stakeholders has to win. Now, admittedly, there are other stakeholders. There's your supply base. There's your community, your environment, even Toyota constant competition as a stakeholder. Very few companies do that, by the way. But I focused on the top three here: employees, customers, shareholders. Okay, and you know, Honda had a saying that said, "Hey, if we don't take care of our employees, they're number one. They won't take care of our customers. If we don't take care of our customers, they're not going to take care of our shareholders." Okay. So this Lean Trilogy can't be a zero-sum game. We also have to find out what do each one of these groups want. It's not obvious. And if you think it's obvious and you haven't asked, I can guarantee you're going to be wrong. Okay. So remember, when it comes to people, you got to walk the talk. You can go out and make all the speeches you want, but if you continue to behave opposite of what you said in that speech, then people are going to pick you up in a heartbeat and know that you're full of you know what, okay? Lean is about people. At the end of the day, people like to think about technology. They like to think about tools, lean tools. Remember that equipment depreciates, people appreciate. And we don't want our people hanging the brain on a hook when they come in to work in the morning and picking it up on the way out when they go home. Okay. Trying to financially justify everything was error two. Okay. I see this time and time again. And I'm a former CFO. Okay. There's certain things you can't justify. And this is what led me to developing what we now call lean accounting. I'm known, I guess, as the father, and I'm getting old enough, I'm the grandfather of lean accounting. Okay, we didn't call it that back then. But I was a pretty darn good cost accountant in my early days when I got out of college. And you know, for about 8-9 years, I worked in cost accounting. And when I started learning lean, and when George Konosaker and Art Burns sent me to Japan, and I came back and started understanding the concepts, all the cost accounting stuff that we were doing were absolutely counterintuitive. Okay. Actually, I'd say counterintuitive. They were causing unlean dysfunctional behaviors, whether it be purchase price variance, whether it be absorption accounting, standard costing, variance analysis. I was just with a client not too long ago, and he showed me his accounting, brand new client. He showed me his accounting report with all these variances. Labor efficiency variance, labor rate variance, labor variable overhead efficiency variance, variable overhead spending variance. So I said, what do you do with all these variances? He said, well, we analyze them. We dive in and we analyze and find out what's going on. Okay, so here's a variance right there. I pointed to a sheet and I said, what went on there? And he just looked at me. He didn't know. I said, I bet you most of the time when you spend time, I didn't use the word waste time, but it is a waste. When you spend time looking into those things, you're not walking away with any countermeasures that are going to improve anything. You're just explaining away the numbers. And most of the time, you're going to say to yourself, oh, the standard was wrong. Okay. So guess what? Why are we doing this stuff? Okay. and causing all these dysfunctional behaviors. But trying to financially justify this is crazy. So I counsel people when they're asked by their CFO to justify their lien, transformation. Here's my answer. Geez, I really don't know how to do that. I'm sure you've done it in your department, Mr. CFO. Can you show me how you justified your accounting people and your financial analyst? Show me the method you use to justify all those people. And, you know, I can then take that model and use it in my own group. It's a foolish thing to ask, to try to financially justify everything. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say you're not supposed to have results, okay? Yeah, you are. But, you know, the whole notion here is you should be teaching people how to fish if you're a lien office. That's your that's your product that you're looking to export, to develop capability within your organization. But if you have a CFO standing there with a clipboard with the green shades and he's in the stands while you're in the arena fighting the lions, it's not going to work for a number of different reasons. The main reason is you need the CFO in the lean transformation. They can't be spectators. Okay, and I see this happen time and time and time again. So it can't be that way. So trying to financially justify everything is nuts. I said to somebody one time, how do you justify your gym membership? I mean, if we took the same attitude, the CFO would go to the gym with you, stand there with a clipboard, and at the end of your workout, he'd say, okay, how did that affect your cholesterol? How did that affect your blood pressure? I guess you can take that. How did it affect your, you know, how many calories did you burn? Well, I guess if you can believe the numbers on the treadmill, those are always wrong anyway. How did it affect your nutrition, your general health? Oh, I can't justify. Guess what? I'm not working out anymore. Okay. Certain things can't be justified. All right. Just certain things can't be justified. So that's something. And you got to remember, lean is not about reducing headcount. Or I should say, maybe put another way, putting people out of work. Some companies here are being lauded as great lean transformations, are putting tens of thousands of people on the street, and they're constantly laying people off. That's not lean. Any idiot can do that. Any idiot can fire people. And the crazy thing about it, these CFOs or CEOs that are doing this don't have to face the person when they're told, you don't have a job, okay? They don't have to face these people, right? One company actually made, a big company made a announcement right before Thanksgiving that, oh yeah, after the first of the year, we're going to have more layoffs. Well, guess what, Johnny? You're not getting the bike this Christmas because I don't know if I'm going to have my job in January. All right? That's a true story. Okay? Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Lean does not mean less employees are needed. Okay? Now, I'm showing on the screen here a picture of a watermelon. Split open. There's something I call watermelon KPIs, okay? A friend of mine in the Netherlands actually, you know, gave me this idea. A watermelon KPI could be, you know, you're showing on-time delivery to promise date, and you're 100% on-time delivery to a customer that you, a promise date you made to a customer, but the customer needed it 2 weeks earlier. So the customer's marking you red as a supplier. You're marking yourself green. Those are what we call watermelon KPIs. Green on the outside, red on the inside. Okay, so beware of watermelon KPIs and get your measures attuned to your customer base. Similar to this, basing decisions on cost as opposed to the hierarchy of safety, quality, delivery and cost, all right, SQDC. This equation has gotten me out of trouble a lot of times when I had to make decisions. I first said, no, we're not going to ship a poor quality to the customer. Q comes before D, delivery. Quality comes before delivery. And oh yeah, by the way, we need to get this to the customer because we're late on the shipment. We're going to air ship it. So delivery is more important than C, cost. It's going to be costly to airship, okay? SQDC, of course, safety always comes number one. This is not a list. This is a ranking, a priority, a hierarchy. Many companies talk a great game in this, but instead of SQDC, safety, quality, delivery, cost, they truly operate, when you stand back and take a look, they operate in a CCCC mindset. Cost, 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 cost. Does your company do that? Now, talking about quality, I'm showing a slide here on cost per quality. And, you know, there's some 90 some odd, you know, elements of cost per poor quality. But if you're a Three Sigma company in general, your cost or poor quality is anywhere from 20 to 30% of revenues. Of revenues. So if you're a billion-dollar company, 200 to 300 million are hitting your bottom line, and you don't even know it because these are hidden costs that are a result of things like rework, anything with a redo, rework, you know, reconcile, all these rework loops, and people who have jobs are just to handle problems. Think about the people in your company that are there just to handle problems. And how many people in your company show up every morning saying, okay, well, what problem am I is going to hit me today? And that's what they show up for. No proactiveness. It's all about reactive. Now, think about it. When you ship a product, and I was just with a company that said, now, we don't count when we ship a product to a company with the wrong label on it as a quality problem. Really? Okay. They thought about quality just based on the product, if the product met specifications. But the customer went through all kinds of consternation, barcoding in the, scanning in the wrong stock keeping unit, SKU, screwed up their inventory. We had to send another shipment out, blah, 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 blah. All that cost doesn't get recorded under what we call cost of poor quality. And as Deming said, the biggest cost of poor quality is when your customer no longer wants to do business with you, okay, because of things like this. So cost or poor quality is huge for every company. Most companies have no clue. If you hear a company say, our cost or poor quality is 2.5%, down from 3%, we're doing a great job. That number is so misstated, I can guarantee you they're not counting most of the things that need to be counted in cost or poor quality. Quality, not headcount, okay? Cost is the result of doing the other things right. Cost is a lagging indicator. You cannot cost cut your way to prosperity. And I see this all the time with a maniacal focus on cost. It's like me trying to lose weight and all I'm focusing on are the pounds on the scale. Well, guess what? I'm not going to lose weight unless I look at the leading indicators of nutrition, calories, exercise, sleep, all that kind of stuff, right? Cost is a lagging indicator. Get your processes right, okay? And I have another episode coming up saying stop counting productivity. Productivity is an outcome of having good processes, right? Stop wasting your time. We put more time and effort on managing this thing called efficiency variance, which drives me nuts because those standards are all wrong anyway. Efficiency variance? I got one client. In one plant, 50% is considered good. Another plant, 90% is considered good. Why the difference? Well, because our standards aren't exactly right. What are you doing? What are you doing? Okay. All right. And in that plant, in that company, labor is only like 11% of the total cost. Okay, they're counting pennies and letting dollars slip away. Productivity will get better if you have the right processes. Okay, so stop counting productivity. Now, you may want to look at deviations from standard work and then categorize those and prioritize those for your next Kaizens. Why did we miss our tack time? I got all that. But stop this productivity crap, please. It doesn't make sense. I'll talk more about that in another episode. Error number four, not developing problem-solving culture soon enough. We just assumed everybody knew how to solve problems. Guess what? They don't. Okay. Problems must be solved at the lowest possible, highest necessary level in the organization. But you have to have a framework for problem solving. Expecting results without this framework is the ultimate sign of disrespect. I see it all the time. I see companies that, yeah, we do lean, and we're expecting great things. And here's all our metrics that we're expecting to, you know, get better. I know of one company that in one plant, they said, yeah, we do Kaizen between after lunch on Wednesday between 1 and 3 in the afternoon. That's when we do Kaizen. Well, good luck with that, okay? And they don't provide the training or the senseis to help them. You know, one of the 4 lessons of decoding the DNA of the Toyota Production System by Steven Spears and Kent Bowen is that you have to have a seasoned sensei coach you to make change in the scientific method, okay? And so not providing the framework for change but expecting change is an unbelievable sign of disrespect. We talk about different types of problems, and this is baked into our problem-solving process. A type zero problem is no standard exists at all. So when people say, I had one guy tell me, hey, our forecasting process is all messed up. Oh, show it to me. Oh, yeah, I can show you a forecast. No, I didn't ask you that. I asked you to show me the process that you use to develop your forecast. Well, we don't really have it written down. Okay, that's your first problem. It's a type zero problem. No standard exists, so we got to create a standard, okay, with the people that do the work. A type one problem is the standard does exist, but it's simply not being followed. And there could be a multitude of reasons why that is, right? Could be that, you know, we never consulted the people doing the work, so they did a lot of workarounds because we missed a bunch of stuff. Or we never got them involved, so they didn't buy into the process, okay? You know, Ono says that you should involve the operators in creating these standards, right? A type two problem is standards do exist, but the standard doesn't give you the desired results. It's a poor standard, okay? So each one of these three things, and I don't care if doing a Kaizen, most Kaizens fit into these problem-solving type of models. Doing these, one of these three things will lead you to the actions you need to take during a particular Kaizen. I can't solve a problem without knowing where I am in this regard. Type 0, 1, or 2. When I went to Toyota, and George Koenigsegg, Art Burns sent me to Toyota in Japan in 1990, okay, an executive said to us, what makes a world-class company is the way in which they solve problems. Even the great Toyota has problems, but we only solve our problems once. Okay, meaning they don't fix problems, they solve problems. An example, and I see this with Gemba walk-around meetings every morning, which to me turn into expediting meetings. I'm not a big fan of Gemba walks, by the way, just to let you know. If they're done right, yeah, maybe. But anyway, let's say a PC board blows in a piece of equipment. Here's how problem solving is looked at in most companies. When can we get that part in and get that machine back and running? Yeah, Charlie, we're going to get it up at, parts coming in at 2. We'll have it up by 3. Okay, Joe, thanks a lot. Good update. That's not solving the problem. What happened to our PM program or TPM program? Why don't we have predictive maintenance on that board? What other boards are going to blow that we don't know about? Okay. Why didn't we have the part in stock? Okay. You see, that's not solving a problem. that's fixing a problem. So solving problems is a big deal. And to me, it's the essence of lean. Doing lean, error five, doing lean without considering your business strategy. You've got Kaizens going on all over the place. Hopefully they're going to hit something that is meaningful. But if you're not tying your Kaizen activities back to your strategic plan through strategy deployment, or some people call Hoshin Kanri, Hoshin planning, okay, it doesn't make sense, all right? So you got to focus. You also have to focus on what not to do, okay? And remember, strategy deployment is all about working on the right things and deciding what you're not going to work on as well, at least for the time being. You know, rough numbers, 60, 70% of your lean initiatives should focus back on your strategic breakthrough objectives. Okay. Era six, mostly focus on point Kaizens versus enterprise Kaizens. I talk a lot about this in other episodes, right? A point Kaizen is I'm going to go into one area, create a cell, put standard work in. Okay. And those, and by the way, nothing wrong with point Kaizens. Don't get me wrong. Right. However, I've learned over the years that when you try to optimize any one function, you will sub-optimize the enterprise. And when we changed the name to the Danaher Business System from the Danaher Production System, we thought we were clever because we said, hey, you know, there's waste in all the other functions like marketing and finance and, you know, HR, engineering, whatever, sales. So let's make this a business system. And that's what we did. And we started taking waste out of these various functions. And by the way, there is waste in those functions. Okay, got that. However, what we didn't realize is we'll suboptimize ourselves if we try to create a great function. We'll suboptimize the enterprise. We need to have all these functions working together in concert as a with a unique set of objectives, focused as a team, a cross-functional team, all working towards the same objectives, okay? So, you know, you look at these functions, and people would ask me, what kind of company was Danaher? Were you guys a manufacturing company, an engineering company, a sales marketing company? Every company has a flavor, if you will, okay? And my answer was none of those. We did not want to become the best manufacturing company in the world. We did not want to become the best engineering, marketing, whatever company, fill in the blank. We wanted to become the best enterprise in the world. And for that to happen, we have to work in cross-functional value streams. Hard to do, easy to say, okay? But we don't want to be the best functions. We want to be the best enterprise. And that was one of the magics of the Danaher Business System. But we weren't there at first. We focused on all these point Kaizens within these functions, and we weren't really focusing on enterprise-wide achievements. Strategy deployment, what Danaher called policy deployment, when I put it in the early 90s, I learned it from the Japanese. We call it policy deployment, okay? But they're still using it today, which is like over three decades ago that we put this in, which is mind-boggling to me that it's still going on. But that's what really, when you look at cross-functional teams and any breakthrough, okay, that's where you start operating like an enterprise and not a bunch of functions. You can't achieve greatness by operating in traditional ways. The other thing is, if you have a framework, and I'm going to have an episode coming up to talk about Mira and Miri. Mira being unevenness and Miri being overburdening, okay? Those are usually caused by, those two forms of waste are usually caused by policy and how you're organized, the framework of your business. So if you have a framework that is suboptimal and you're trying to optimize yourself within that framework, you will never be great. Never. That framework has to change. Okay. And again, this was error number 7, which is mirror and mirror. Okay. Not all the focus on Muda, which is the traditional 7 ways, but not, not on mirror and mirror. Okay. And again, any attempt to optimize one function in isolation will sub-optimize the enterprise. I can guarantee you that. I'm sure you guys have had that experience. Error 8, making the tools the objective. Hey, how many Kaizens did you do? How many standard works did you do? How many cells did you design? How many combats did you put in? How many 5S events did you do? That's not the game. And your customer couldn't give a damn about how many Kaizens you did and how many 5Ss you did. Okay? Use the tools. And don't get me wrong. You have to be very good at the tools. But you can't just focus on tools. You have to focus on people. Okay? And principles. This is one of my earlier episodes on DBS. The 5 Ps. Right? Purpose. Principles, people, plan, and process. Process being the tools. Most people start there and most people end there, and their lean transformation fails, right? It's like me going to my garage and saying, hey, I'm going to get really good at swinging a hammer and using a screwdriver. Okay, Mark, now we need you to build a house. Jeez, I'm not sure I know how to do that. But I can't swing a pretty mean hammer, okay? Who cares? Right? But you have to be good at the tools, don't get me wrong. But it's not the tools alone that's going to do it. You have to use the tools to reach your objectives, but you have to know how to build a house. So don't become enamored with lean. Be more enamored with delighting your key stakeholders, your employees, your customers, and your shareholders. Okay? And don't tool audit your way to failure. All right, I have a whole episode in the past. I forget which number it was, but it's all about audits. I disdain lean audits, especially by corporate functions. Usually it's because the corporate function doesn't know what to do. Okay. And they claim that all of the people they serve are their customers. Well, then why are you auditing your customer? I never saw a supplier audit their customer. Okay. Get rid of these audits. Okay, they're a waste. And again, we had audits at Danaher, and maybe that should have been the 11th humble error. Okay. Error 9, leadership viewing lean as a spectator sport. All right. Leaders often wanted to outsource their lean initiatives to the DBS office. Okay. No. Leaders have to learn this, and the only way they learn it is hands-on. They can't sit and watch you do it or audit. I would kick CEOs out of my Kaizens when they would step in, sit down. I just want to observe. Really? No, not here. You're not going to observe here. Sorry. That's not how you learn. The other thing is you're sending a message to the team that says, I'm superior. I can learn just by watching you guys do this. I don't need to get involved here, okay? Well, guess what? You're not going to get involved if I'm running it because I won't let you do that. It's a disrespect to the team, and you're going to be a disruption, and you won't learn anything anyway. No spectators, okay? This is a hands-on game, and you can't learn to play golf by simply watching Tiger Woods. You have to pick up the club, and you have to swing it. Okay, this is a hands-on contact sport. What we're trying to do is teach capabilities to other people. You know, I talked about cost before, and George Sherman, our CEO, God rest his soul, to me, he was the greatest CEO I ever met. He he never asked me how much money the DBS office saved. Never said, "Hey, Mark, how much you guys, you know, can you cost justify your group?" Never, never. Because he knew the operating units was where that responsibility lied, okay? Our job was to transfer explicit and tacit know-how within our company into leadership and into the rank and file, okay? So the adage we went by is you give a fish to a man, you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, you feed him for a lifetime, right? That was what DBS was all about in our office, teaching other people how to fish. And then this whole business about DBS, it's optional. I was working with a big insurance company, and the CEO was a great guy, but he was weak, a weak leader, and he let his presidents decide whether or not they were going to do lean. They had a whole system. They had a lady running it. They had a whole office and the whole thing. But it was optional. Yeah, you don't really have to do it. Their problem is they're making too much money. It's hard to change somebody that's doing really well financially, even though their processes were a mess. 250 days to pay a claim. Took 89 days to do a quarterly close on their books. Underwriting, they were only winning 6% of their incoming underwriting requests. So they were a mess. But they were making money despite themselves, and the delusions of grandeur were such that everybody thought that they were good. These are talented people from an insurance perspective, but from an operating perspective. And so the CEO said to me, Mark, you got to realize we're an insurance company. We don't make cars. My response was, I'm just glad you don't, because I would never ride in one of them, ever. Definitely wouldn't buy one, okay? So he let it be optional, all right, which is a big mistake, big mistake. So two of his three divisions just kind of half-assed it, and one actually said, we ain't doing this anymore. And he let all his lean people go, all right? So not good, not good. So treating DBS, and George Sherman said to me one time at one of our executive conferences, the annual conference out in Palm Springs, Mark, what message do we need to send? You want me to send? He said. I said, yeah, George, just tell people it's not optional. DBS is not optional. And that made a big difference. Okay. Now, how you do DBS is a whole nother game. This wasn't cookie cutter. Every one of our businesses had different challenges. So we had to adjust to that, right? But you weren't going to hit your breakthrough objectives if you didn't do DBS. Sorry. Okay. It's not about working harder either. Okay. It's learning a new way of thinking and a new way of doing business. And that's going to get you where you need to go. Okay. So you have to have non-negotiables. Okay. The non-negotiables are sometimes very detailed. Now, one of our non-negotiables was you're going to measure your on-time delivery to your customer based on request date, not on promise date. I mean, you can measure it on promise date, but we're not going to look at it. We want to understand request date. And every year, you're going to reduce at minimum 50% your quality defects and your lead time, okay, at minimum, okay? Another non-negotiable was chairs in a cell. We didn't want to fight 200 times around the world why you had to have chairs in a cell. We'll explain to you why, and we had a very good argument, why you don't put chairs in a cell. But that was a non-negotiable, okay? So a very important thing to think about. Okay. Lead with principles, all right? Respect for people, the flow first, pull second, never push. Solving problems at the lowest possible level, okay? Go see, go observe. Assure quality before passing your product or information onto the next process. All these principles, okay? Use your brain before your wallet. The principles are just in time, all right? These principles are really what held Danaher together. People say, what kind of culture do you have at Danaher? I don't know. what company do you want to talk about? We have so many different divisions and companies. Each one had their own unique culture. But one thing that we insisted on is the principles were going to be the same throughout. The principles of DBS, which I just described some of them, okay? We're not going to waver on those. Now, if you have all these values and principles on your poster boards and on your letterhead and all that, but you don't have a process for them, then all they are slogans, okay? That's all they are. I mean, think about it. You don't have a way to enact these things. I asked one, doing a lean boot camp one time for a big company, and the CEO and his staff was there, and I said, how many people here, you know, believe in career development? Oh, yeah, we believe in career development. Okay, can you show me the process that you use to enact career development? They didn't have one. I said, well, how many people here have a career development plan? Nobody. So it was a slogan. It was a slogan. You solve problems at the lowest possible level in the company. But I don't have a problem-solving process. And I know people that train problem-solving. Oh, sorry. That's a slogan, okay? You got to back up these things with more than just words and talk, right? So you're perfectly engineered to get the results you've already gotten, okay? And if you like the way it's going now, I can't even argue that if you stay the same, you'll be okay, because you won't. Things will go backslide. They will backslide, okay? So those are some of the errors that we made, okay? There are certain other things I probably would not have done back then. Definitely audits. I wouldn't do an audit anymore. The certification with green belts and black belts and all that crap. Nope. Certification, I have a whole episode on certification. Not only certifying people, but certifying companies. Like with the Shingo Prize, that's a kiss of death to me. I don't need a third party telling me I'm good. I got my customers that will tell me that, okay? That's a whole racket anyway, I think. And it's a big consulting racket. And I get the Esteem Shingo Award. And if I don't make it, oh, I got to hire them to consult and get me back on track. Yeah. We didn't waste any time with that kind of crap, okay? Not at all. So I never pushed it. And it would be not worth your time to do that. It will be a big distraction because you'll be working on things that don't matter to your key stakeholders, all right? So those are the kind of things that we stayed away from. So we did do those things right, in my opinion, okay? Anyway, I'll stop there. This was episode 67, Humble Errors. I could probably talk about another 10 errors that we made that I didn't put in this presentation, but I think that's enough for now. So if you have any questions, please let me know if you have had these kind of issues and whether or not you can self-correct out of them and achieve a quicker speed to value. See you next time. Stay lean.
Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.